It's the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 180. I am your host, Adam Mangum. First up, Brandon Gurney of the Deseret News joins us to talk about spring football. What have we learned and what haven't we learned? What's the backup QB situation like? And is the defense going to be any good in 2015? Matt and I then give our final four picks. We talk about Mark Pope leaving for Utah Valley University. We also talk about Badger calling out some of his fellow DBs from last year. This is the Rise and Shout Podcast. You can download us on iTunes. You can check us out at loyalcougars.com. You can tweet us at BYU_RiseShout. And you can listen right now. Welcoming back to the Rise and Shout Podcast, frequent guest and friend Brandon Gurney of the Deseret News. Brandon, welcome back to the podcast.
Always good to talk to you.
So, Brandon, we are now nearing the end of spring football practices. Let's talk about what have we learned so far about this team that's going to help us understand what this team's going to be like. And then we'll, on the flip side of that, after you've answered that, I'll ask you what do we still not know. But let's start with what have we learned about this team and things we may not have known or didn't know enough of a few weeks ago.
Well, you can always overrate what you can actually learn during any spring practice session. I've learned that through the years. But there's several noteworthy things. I feel the offense is far more along than the defense. There's still going to be a ton of question marks for the defense at various positions come fall camp. But you look at BYU offensively, they pretty much got everything figured out on that offensive side. There's a few positions, like the backup quarterback thing is an enormous subplot in my mind, potentially, if Taysom Hill gets hurt. But other than that, you're looking at guys like Mitch Matthews, who I just watching him, man, he looks fantastic. And also running back, there's some concern there with Jamal Williams not being a sure thing that he's going to be back and revert to his normal form come fall. That's kind of up in the air. And you do have Adam Hine and obviously Algie Brown returning, which gives you some comfort at that position. But a little thin there, a little thin. But all the other positions, they're looking good this spring. So I think offensively there's a lot to be optimistic about, absent of you know, if disaster happens and Taysom Hill gets hurt for any amount of time. Potential disaster, I should say. I shouldn't just define that as disaster without any allowance. But
well, let me follow up on that. We had a question on Twitter from Andre Hutchins about the backup QB in the fall. I'll phrase it this way. Brandon. Let's say game one. Oh gosh, even saying it makes me sick to my stomach. Taysom gets hurt. Who's the quarterback? Just, you know, your guess now, obviously. Likely, there are a couple of likely guys that aren't there and didn't participate in spring. Is it McCoy Hill or one of the younger guys? And does it make a difference if it's game four or five? Your answer, would it change?
Yeah, it would definitely be a different scenario if it's further down during the season in October, November, for a lot of reasons. The three guys you're talking about mainly are going to be McCoy Hill, Bo Hodge, and Tanner Mangum. And I'd like to touch on every single one of them. Starting with McCoy Hill, I think Jason Beck put it best on just how McCoy Hill getting hurt and not being able to participate in spring ball affects the team, and that he was going to be the bar come fall. They were going to just develop him over time, and he was going to be the guy that Tanner Mangum and Bo Hodge had to equal to become Taysom Hill's primary backup. They're not going to have that now. I mean, he'll be back. He'll be taking part in the offseason, but so is Tanner Mangum and Bo Hodge for most of it. And you're not going to have that bar, so there's just going to be – they're just behind a practice session in that regard. And McCoy Hill, I'd like to see him practice, to be honest, which I've never seen the guy practice. I mean, he looks great. He's got a lot of potential, but man, it's just hard to prognosticate anything for certain about him. I think the same could be said for BYU coach just talking about him, which is a scary prospect when you're talking about the backup quarterback position.
Yeah, it is.
And then you have Tanner Mangum. I just want to be clear. I love Tanner Mangum. I think he's going to end up being a very, very good quarterback for BYU. I do not believe that's going to happen this coming season. You're talking about a return missionary quarterback who hasn't had spring. Just name me a return missionary quarterback that can be thrust in that scenario and thrive. I don't think you can count on anything from Tanner Mangum this year. Anything. And that's not to say that I'm not high on his prospects, because I really am. But I have a lot of doubts on his ability to just come in, shake off that missionary rust, and just get going at a position that's as complex. And where there's so many nuances and reads and timing issues as the quarterback position. It's not like he's coming back to play defensive line. It's a whole different animal with quarterback. And I just don't believe that you can count on Tanner Mangum for anything given his timetable. I feel it's folly, to be honest with you. I mean, guys on Twitter and email always point out, well, he's an Elite 11 quarterback. Don't you believe in him? It's like, well, that's not really relevant. What is relevant is his timetable and the history of return missionaries being able to acclimate. In covering BYU, it takes at least a year for any return missionary quarterback coming back. Taysom Hill was a little unique, but I'd argue it was more of his legs, and he had different attributes that just made him overcome that hump faster than most guys that have to rely exclusively on their dropbacks, timing, and footwork in the pocket. Taysom Hill's just a different animal in that regard, and Tanner Mangum doesn't have that ability. I don't think any quarterback has that ability for that matter. And then Bo Hodge, I would say that as far as just an early contributor, an early candidate, I'd be tempted to put Bo Hodge over Tanner Mangum, in that he's fresh off high school. And he's going to have that timing down, and he's an intriguing guy. We'll see what he has, but it's not a good thing to enter the fall practice session and have a stable of three guys that you're counting on that haven't really had a practice session with meaningful reps. It's not where you want to be for certain, and maybe it's going to be a mute issue. Maybe Taysom Hill can play healthy the entire year, and everything's going to be fine and dandy. But man, if he goes down, the potential for drop off for this offense could be extreme if none of those three guys pan out. But I mean, we'll tackle that when we have to come fall. But to me, it remains a pretty big concern offensively. But absent that, I think what's going to help, if any of those three guys do have to be thrust in, is what they're going to have around them. I believe the offensive line is going to prove to be the best offensive line BYU's had probably since 2006. I really believe that. I think their top five guys are solid. They're talented, and I believe an offensive line can cover an enormous amount of gaps in other areas, or just deficiencies in other areas. And I believe the wide receivers are going to be very good to these new quarterbacks. I'm all in on Mitch Matthews. Every single practice we see includes an 80-yard touchdown grab by Mitch Matthews. He's just killing guys out there, right. And you believe that hype because you've seen him do it on the field before. Maybe you haven't seen the consistency, but you have definitely seen what Mitch Matthews is capable of. Now with the season, he's really embraced the leadership role. He's worked harder than anyone. And you have a 6'6 guy who's closer to 6'7 than 6'6 who can move like he did. I mean, he has all the specs to become that dominant receiver. And when you see what Nick Kurtz can do, and then Devon Blackman has really acclimated himself as well, it's hard not to be excited about the potential of BYU's wide receivers. And that could be the saving grace for not just Taysom Hill, maybe taking a bit more of a load off his feet, but for the backup quarterback, they're having to be thrust in. So those are some positives.
Yeah, absolutely. You had mentioned at the beginning, of course, the defensive side of the ball has some question marks. Let's start in the defensive backfield. where we've got a high amount of turnover between transfers and graduations. Are we back to where we were, Brandon? And I think you and I talked about this, I think, spring football 2 years ago, where we really don't have any idea if that group back there is going to be, you know, average or maybe a significantly below average in a liability, which BYU has, you know, had that in the past where the defensive backfield isn't the strong suit. Is that kind of where we're at this point going into fall camp?
Potentially. I still think there's a lot of questions to be answered at inside linebacker. Maybe even outside backer a little bit, but inside backer I feel was the biggest deficiency on the team last year. Defensive backfield obviously wasn't good as well, but inside backer to me is a very important position. In regards to the defensive backfield, we're not seeing the cornerbacks that are probably going to be playing a lot. Absent Michael Davis, who's been fairly consistent, a guy who I remain really high on. I think a guy that can really do some good things. And I like Jordan Prater a lot, too. Once he gets back off his academic issues, I feel he's going to do some good things. And then Michael Shelton's gotten some raves. But every practice, we're still seeing these guys get torched left and right. You'd expect that, given the talent of BYU's receivers, and it's hard. You don't want to read too much into what's going on with the extremely limited windows of opportunity we see. But yeah, they need to catch up. The best news out of the defensive backfield has to be Eric Takanaka. He's the JC transfer from Snow, and obviously you want these guys to come in and contribute immediately. He looks like he's there already. He's been seeing first-team reps since the second week of fall practices. Broncos talked glowingly about him, and just watching him out there, he's very instinctive, he's quick. I think BYU really scored with him. A guy that really didn't have any offers that people kind of questioned, really, we're offering this guy? But he looks legit, and I continue to like Kai Nakua. I think Kai Nakua has got a lot of potential as a player. So I think with those two at safety, could potentially be good and maybe even a little upgrade to what BYU had a year ago. You don't want to jump to that conclusion already, but I think just with what Takanaka has shown, I think that just kind of alleviates a lot of concern that you otherwise might have had at the safety position.
Right.
And jumping inside linebacker, you want to see Harvey Longy and Manoa Pakula out there. And Tio Kautai, for that matter, especially Harvey Longy. Harvey Longy is the guy that needs to play Mike Backer, a very talented guy, an alpha male type guy, a Nwani Unga / Uwana Kamanga type guy that BYU didn't have last year. It's a very, very important position. Broncos mentioned many times before, it's probably the most important position in a 3-4 alignment. And Harvey Longy is still new to this position. We saw that athleticism and what he's able to do. It's not like he can't catch up. He probably can, but it's not a good thing he's not out there. But you hope for the best. He's in team meetings, and he's obviously phenomenally talented. But I think he's a real key for this defense because I think he's the one guy that really has the talent to be that guy. But then you have guys like Austin Heater, a guy that's very intent on keeping that Mike linebacker spot. He's got a good spring, and Harvey Long is going to have to beat him out come fall. So maybe with those two, you're going to have some answers there. Austin Heater, he's not going to blow you away with his athleticism, but he's a very hard worker, very studious. Very instinctive out there. A guy that filled in toward the end of last season and did a pretty decent job. We'll see what happens there. And then Buck linebacker, I think Manoa Pakula is much better suited to play Buck than Mike, and I think you saw that throughout last season. I didn't have a strong year last year, but I think once he's back to Buck linebacker where he can rotate with Tiu Kautai, I think they could potentially be a lot better at the inside linebacker position, which was not good last year, by and large, the play from those positions.
Yeah. So just thinking big picture here with the defense, last year there was a lot of fan frustration and maybe a little in the media with Nick Howell as the defensive coordinator, Broncos coming back to make the play calls. Now, I'm going to make a statement. You tell me if this sounds right or if you think I'm off the rocker. My opinion about last year had much more, I thought the defense had issues with players more than scheme, guys out of position, which, again, that can go to coaching, clearly. But was last year's defensive struggles a player issue, a coach issue, both? How do you take that, and what does that mean going into next season?
Well, it's hard to pinpoint any certain thing that went wrong. I agree with you. It's not a schematic thing. I believe that Hal was calling the right defenses, the right situation. But I believe the culture that the defense normally has was largely gone, and you can chalk it up to coaching. It's not a cut on Coach Hal to say the Bronco needs to coach that defense. You look at Bronco and what he does as a coach. There is no question what his biggest strength is, and that's a defensive coordinator. Taking away what his biggest strength is, I don't think it's a very smart thing to do. I believe he's extraordinary with what he can get out of players. Just talking to former players, just his presence and just how he carries himself is not equaled. And it's not just something you can just stick someone in and get that same result. I think Bronco understands that probably better than he ever has before starting this year. And I think by his mere presence there, with what he does best, being there, being an active coach on the defensive side of the ball, I think it's going to breed a lot better results. And you couple that with more returning experience and just with what the defense went through last year, I'd be surprised if they weren't upgraded. What could be the Achilles heel for the defense this coming year is they're going to be playing a lot better offenses.
Yes, they are.
At least on paper.
Yes, they are.
You're talking Nebraska, UCLA, Boise State, and then you know Harbaugh's going to have Michigan going again. Yeah,
yep.
You know that's going to happen. So, and not to even mention Missouri. I mean, that schedule's brutal. And the offenses are going to be a lot better. So Boise's defense better be. It can't be a defense that's given up. How many points did they give up to Memphis? 55 points? That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
There's no way a BYU defense should ever do that. And can you just imagine what you saw with Boise State to that defense? But they're going to have to be in their best form. And I believe they're going to be upgraded. But you might not see that the first four games just with the quality of opponents, but we'll see. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. In some ways, it'll be hard, Brandon, for us to know how good they are because of the quality of the team. We may find out later in the year that unit was better than we thought. Flipping to the other side, last spring football question for you was, there's smoke coming out of camp that newsflash, Robert and I might use a tight end. Is this smoke or is there fire? I mean, I look at the group there. None of them are highly touted necessarily, so you don't necessarily maybe have the elite talent there at that position. But on the other hand, you know, offensive coaches, Robert and I like this as well. They sometimes tweak and make a big change, and certainly for him, throwing the tight end in there in the mix would be a massive change from the last couple of seasons. Do you think that's a real thing or just kind of coaches talking a little bit and players talking a little bit in spring football?
Well, I was kind of joking with Jay Drew and Jeff Collin, the reporter, so it seems like we've been covering that story every year since the night's been offensive coordinator. And with Coach and I, if you're betting on the prospect of change or no change, I put my money on no change every single time. And that's the strength of this. I mean, fans, there's a lot of complaints about always not imaginative. He doesn't, and he's not that coordinator. He's never going to be that coordinator. He's a system guy. He's extremely good at developing that system, teaching that system, and not deviating from that system. And when you're talking about just going double tight and all that, maybe the offense is advanced enough that they can do stuff like that as opposed to last year where they weren't really able to do much variation. But I don't know. I'm very hesitant to call out any changes with formations with a nicer offensive coordinator, and especially when it comes to tight ends and more use there. Anai's going to put his best 11 guys on the field, and I believe that best 11 is going to end up being a wide formation with Devon Blackman, Nick Kurtz, Juergens probably at the other slot, Taron Houck, and then Mitch Matthews. Their best 11 is probably not going to consist of a true tight end going with a tight formation. So just given that, I'm not buying it. Yeah. Is what I guess I'm saying. I'm very hesitant to buy it. I'm probably not going to buy the use of more tight ends.
Yeah, yeah. I would not, if not that Vegas would have such a bet, but if they did, I would not. You'd have to have pretty long odds for me to be willing to take that one. Let's flip to basketball for a second, Brandon. You know, you've covered a lot of the guys that will play for BYU next year that we either haven't seen or might be returning from missions and such. You know, there's after the way the season ended, you know, seemingly on an upswing, and then that first four crushing first four loss. Mm-hmm. Is there? I mean, right now, a lot of fans are, I think, kind of crushed, want to be hopeful for next year, but just the taste left in your mouth for that last game was not good. Is there reason for optimism? Do you think this is going to be a year where the program takes a step forward, or with all this inexperience, do you think, even with Collinsworth leading the team, that this is probably a little bit of a step back, not because of talent, just because of unfamiliarity playing with each other?
Man, that's a good question, and it's hard to know. I mean, Tyler Haas, losing him is just, man, that's what a loss that's going to be. But the BYU's biggest issue, I think, is going to be addressed, which is the front court. You're going to have Nate Austin back, and I remain really high on Corbin Kapusa. You see flashes during every game where you're just like, wow, I mean, Coach Rose laid it out with qualifying it, but he kind of reminded him of Akeem Olajuwon one, and just his how raw he was, and just how exciting his potential was. I say he's going to be Akeem Olajuwon would be Park, right? And I don't think Rose meant to say that, but it's easy to say what he meant when watching Corbin Kapusi play. And I think he has a lot of potential. I think he could be very good. And then you have Kyle Davis on the bench, and I've heard very good things from practices that he's really that nitty gritty guy, that enforcer that they wanted Luke Worthington to be, but really wasn't able to do it. He's that guy from what I've heard. And then you throw in Jamal Ates. I don't think defensively he's going to be a guy, but offensively I think BYU really lacked a lot in the low post, and he's really good, should be able to shore that up significantly. So it's hard to say that any team's going to be better or fare better when you lose a guy like Tyler Haas. But considering everyone that's back, I believe that BYU is going to be very competitive again, and probably a tournament team would be the expectation. I think Rose has that program where that's going to be the expectation every year, but I think it's fascinating. I think next year's team is going to be truly fascinating, and just with what looks to be a much better address front court, I like the potential. I like where BYU basketball is going, and I think they could potentially be very good.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely agree with you. It'll be fascinating. Both football and basketball this year could be an extremely fascinating year to be a BYU fan. Well, thank you, Brandon, for coming on the show. We'll, of course, have you. You know, I was trying to think of some cool April Fool's joke to do with you, but apparently I'm not that creative. I couldn't think of anything, and it's, you know, almost 9 o'clock my time. I'm already sick of April Fool's, so I couldn't really come up with anything. So luckily you didn't have to endure some lame April Fool's joke. But thanks for coming on, and we'll have you on again soon.
I appreciate it. Pleasure as always.
Rise and shout, Matt. It's podcast time.
Yes, it is, my friend.
So, Matt, let's start off in the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
Now, before we do this, we are recording this on April 1st. Most of you will listen to it not on April 1st. There will be no April Fool's Day tomfoolery.
No April Fool's shenanigans on this podcast.
No, siree. No siree. And that's what I want to say before I announce that you and I will be the play-by-play team on BYU TV football this upcoming season.
Really looking forward to it. I think it's a great opportunity.
Yes, we will be the first ever selected with zero actual professional broadcasting experience.
None at all.
I mean, this does not count. We do this for free.
Well, I don't know. I was on a cable access TV show in high school.
Well, I apologize, sir. I take back what I just said. One of us has cable, high school cable experience.
And it started out, was supposed to be like a local TV, like local news and high school sports show. And it quickly descended into sketch comedy after a handful of episodes.
Of course it did.
So,
of course it did. So, Matt, but let's get serious now. Tweet bag from Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter.
Sweeney gets his own sound effect.
He does get his own
sound effect. I know we've talked about that.
Is he the only guest that gets his own sound effect?
But there's other guests.
What about at Bullishism?
Well, see, the problem is all the ones I come up with at Bullishism that I'd like to do.
You feel like it somehow will be inappropriate.
Yes.
That makes sense.
I've come up with some really good ones that are definitely inappropriate, and a couple that are borderline. So okay. I'm still working on one. I'm still working on one for the Irish Mexican.
Okay, so let's get back to Justin D. Sweeney.
All right, Justin D. Sweeney.
Favorite general conference tradition? I know what mine is, Matt. What's yours?
Taking a nap.
Dang it, I should have gone first.
Oh, yeah.
So I get chastised every single general conference, and I'll only do it with the kids not in the room. But I will say to my wife, oh, a 70's on, I can sleep now. Oh, boy. She's like, that is completely inappropriate. I'm like,
that's
well.
That's just not right.
I think she's shouting at me that's inappropriate.
From the other room. She shouldn't be shouting during general conference. You're trying to listen.
That's true.
The thing with the kids where you have the like the buzzwords. You know, pick a handful of words, and there's a bowl of candy. That sometimes has gotten a little out of control. But then even the littlest one, but even the littlest one is listening. You know, he doesn't hear any other word other than the four words that result in candy, but he's sitting still, and he's waiting.
We haven't tried that.
Our kids seem to really enjoy that. And then you switch the words up. Between sessions.
I don't think it'll work with the 10-month-old.
No, probably not.
I think she's just going to be doing her usual chaotic stuff during conference, which will be no different than me not hearing any part of sacrament meeting.
Well, and it's like all of the kids at some point, I mean, are going to be pretty chaotic.
Yes.
I don't know how everybody else's kids handle this, but...
I mean, do you handle well sitting down for, how many hours in a weekend? It's a lot of hours to sit down.
But you know what? Do you know what I feel bad about?
What's
I watch that much football in a weekend, but I don't sit the whole time. Like, I'll get up and get a snack. I'll switch to a different game. I'll take a nap.
So
it's actually very similar.
Yeah, it's actually almost exactly the same. Eating some snack food, watching a television, occasionally falling asleep. So Matt, let's talk about something else not really related to BYU sports. The Final Four, Matt.
Yes.
So... let's talk about the Final Four you thought that was going to be there versus the Final Four that is there. And by the way, is the new ESPN, is that a joke? Or is that real? Do you know?
What is it? I've had a very long day at work. I haven't seen any of it.
ESPN.com, the new layout. I think it came out yesterday, so I don't think it's a joke. There's a lot of ads.
Going to website now?
I don't know. I don't like change, Matt. I don't like change. Let's see.
Yeah.
And it's
they're serious.
It thinks I like Real Salt Lake, so it's giving me like Real Salt Lake stuff. So that's kind of annoying.
It apparently thinks I like very little bit of actual usable space.
Yes. True that. Anyway, so Matt, back to the Final Four. We've got four teams, hence the name Final Four. And let's talk about each of those four teams and whether you saw them as a potential team coming in. So let's start with Kentucky. We both picked them to win the whole dang thing. So yes, we saw them getting into the Final Four.
Right.
Wisconsin, Matt, who did you have on that side of the bracket?
I had Kentucky, Wisconsin there.
Oh, okay. So you picked that one. I had Arizona. I had Arizona. So I was definitely, I shouldn't say I was surprised. I had Wisconsin until that game. And I thought it would be a good close game, which it was a good close game. The Wisconsin kind of pulled away there at the end. On the other side, Matt, I'm assuming you did not have Michigan State. I don't recall, but I'm sure it was in Michigan State.
I didn't. I had Oklahoma, actually.
I had Virginia on that side of the bracket.
Yeah, it was just way off.
Thanks, Virginia. But hey,
thanks for nothing, you bunch of wahoos.
Michigan State, they're the Cavaliers, not the wahoos. Michigan State beat Virginia. Huh? So I kind of had it. And then did you have Duke?
I did not.
I had the Zags.
You know what I did on that side of the bracket? I'm embarrassed to even say it.
Utah.
Georgetown.
Oh. Why are you embarrassed about Georgetown? Just because they didn't do very well?
They did not.
They did
not. They did not do very well.
Yeah, they got beat by the Utes. By the Utes. So, Matt, let's talk about this Final Four. Kentucky, I'm going to make a statement. Agree or disagree? We'll play it this way. Agree or disagree? The outcome of this Final Four is a disappointment unless Kentucky wins the whole thing.
I disagree.
Well, then you're wrong.
I could be highly entertained by this Kentucky-Wisconsin game is going to be a good game. And I think Wisconsin-Duke would be a good game. Wisconsin-Michigan State would be a good game.
Yeah, but here I'll say it a different way. 10 years from now, you will not remember who won this championship unless it's Kentucky.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Who won the championship? Who won the NCAA Final Four in 2005?
Florida.
Dang it! I picked a bad year, huh?
Was I right?
I don't know. I think you are right. I'm going to sportsreference.com and finding out. But my point is, like, this will be a massive historical deal if Kentucky runs the table. And if anybody else runs the table, it's all power programs, right? I mean, I guess Wisconsin hasn't won a championship in a long time, so maybe that's a little bit more memorable. But let's go to the 2005 season. It was North Carolina. Florida was the next 2 years after that.
Oh.
06 and 07. So you were close.
I was close.
You were close. But let me ask you another question. Who won in 91 and 92? Both years. We talked about this last year. Last podcast. It was Duke. I remember that. I can also tell you who won in 1995.
It's Michigan.
No, sir.
Oh, don't.
Michigan, the Fab Five didn't win one.
Oh, that's right. Timeout.
Timeout, so you can look it up on the internet.
No, timeout as in Chris Webber, and I just called a timeout, and we don't have
that
one.
Was North Carolina, right? North Carolina, Eric Montross.
No, that was Chris Webber, Michigan.
I know, against North Carolina, you ninny.
Oh, yeah, I got you.
Yeah. Follow along here.
You just call me a ninny?
It's not the first time I've called you that on this podcast. UCLA was in 95. Tyus Edney, Ed O'Bannon.
Ed O'Bannon, the EA Sports guy. Thanks a lot, Ed.
Yeah, thanks, Ed. Nice lawsuit. So, anyway, I'm just saying the games can be awesome, and the games likely will be awesome. Like you said, any of these matchups could be great. Any of these could be great
basketball.
But 10 years from now, if Kentucky wins, we'll all still remember it because I know a lot of people don't like Calipari and may not like Kentucky and they don't want them to win it and don't want them to have that place in history. But I think it's fun to have somebody run the table, you know, once in a generation.
Yeah, I don't hate somebody just for running the table. I'm not going to take pleasure in, a Wisconsin victory. Like, ah, oh, yeah, somebody finally beat Kentucky.
No, no, me but, either.
But I do think Wisconsin can win that game.
I do think they can as well. I think Notre Dame, you know, obviously that was a close game, right?
That was a ton of fun to watch.
That was of last weekend. I mean, there were some other decent games last weekend, but that was by far the most entertaining game of the weekend, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
You know, there were some other good moments last weekend, so I don't mean to downplay any of the other games, but I think that was the one that we all enjoyed the most. So at this point, you sticking with your original pick, Kentucky to win?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with that.
Me too. Very unimaginative, but still probably the likely outcome. Though Michigan State, I wouldn't throw it past, you know, Tom Izzo knows what he's doing, apparently.
I think it's going to be a Kentucky-Michigan State final.
But, of course, Michigan State was helped by the fact that they did not have to play Villanova. You know, Louisville knocked them off. But you think it's going to be Michigan State with Kentucky?
I think Michigan State's pretty good.
Yeah, they might beat Duke. Duke is like Heckle and Jekyll and Hyde team, yeah. You know? Their losses have been to teams that you're like, eh. But Duke is pretty good, too. Duke
well, and I had good. The I had the opportunity to see the Sweet 16 round.
Yes, yes, so that's true.
So I saw the Duke-Gonzaga game. I'm sorry, I'm flipping those in my head, but the Duke-Utah game. And the UCLA-Gonzaga game. And I felt like I thought Gonzaga was going to beat Duke after seeing them both play just a couple days before. But I think Duke's a beatable team. I think Izzo has got something. He's got some things figured out.
Yeah, he's pretty good at coaching.
He's got
basketball.
A system, and players have bought into that system. And, you know, I think there's a formula for beating Duke. And if Michigan State can figure that out, they'll get the chance to play Kentucky for a national championship.
Hey, like you said, it'll just be fun to be following these games along while we're supposed to be listening to preseason session.
Because Wisconsin could beat Kentucky.
Oh,
Wisconsin is very good.
Absolutely. And the thing is, I live on the border of Minnesota and Wisconsin, right? And I lived in Wisconsin for 5 years. I've got I know a lot of Badger fans who are, you know, they just want to be able to come to work on Monday and say we're in the championship, right? Yeah. Which would be fun. I mean, like I said, I don't really care who wins, but I think Kentucky, it becomes an historic season.
I'll tell you what, if we get a Wisconsin-Michigan State final, I have this question for you.
Yes.
Does that destroy all the naysayers who said that the Big Ten was weak?
Yes. Isn't it already destroyed?
In my opinion, it is.
I mean,
but I'm kind of a Big Ten homer. We've established that.
Yes, we have established it. And I'm not a Big Ten homer. But I will say this. I thought the Big Ten isn't very good thing was overdone. Okay? I mean, are they the ACC? No. Okay? But they're a good conference. They have some good teams. I think part of the bad rap, quite frankly, is the style of basketball a lot of those teams play is a little boring.
Yep.
And, I mean, so I'm not a big fan of games that end where neither team breaks 70. You know, you look back at that famous Christian Laettner game. It was an overtime game when they beat Kentucky. It was over, the teams were each both over 100.
Yeah.
You know, so, and nobody, did anybody in the entire tournament besides a one seed playing a 16 seed break 90?
Villanova
broke 90 against Lafayette, and Arizona broke 90 against Texas San Antonio or Texas, whoever they were playing. People give them a good rap, bad rap because of that, but they're still good teams, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Clearly, a seventh seed out of the Big Ten is playing for a chance at the national championship. So Matt, let's move over to Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news.
So Matt, now that I say this, I open up Sports Reference, and now I've got to open up Rugby So let's look at rugby. They announced the bracket for the cup. And let's see here. And it's not on the BYU rugby site. Of course it's not. Anyway, they're in there. They get a first-round bye. They could play Utah in the semifinals. Matt, will you be watching if BYU's in the national championship on NBC Sports in a few weeks?
Yeah, I'll watch that. Absolutely. Rugby's fun to watch. I mean, I'm not going to watch a ton of it. But if BYU's playing in a national championship game, yeah, I'd watch that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I will be – I covered – I think I mentioned this before, right? I covered the rugby team as a reporter when I was at the Daily Universe.
Didn't they let you participate in a practice or something one day?
Two practices, and it was two of the most painful days of my life.
There you go.
No, it was actually awesome. Rugby is a really fun sport, especially when you get to know it, and especially when you get to understand the rules. But it is not for the faint of heart. I will put it that way. It's a tough game. For the faint of heart. No, it's a tough game. It's fun. Fun game, though. Fun to watch. So, Matt, the other sport that we talk about sometimes here on the podcast that has been kind of disappointing is the men's volleyball team. Did you watch any of last week?
I watched a little bit.
I did as well. They have now dropped 6 matches in a row. Not looking very good either. So Matt, they've got Cal State Northridge on the road and then Hawaii back at home. You know, in the middle of the season where we were saying they could win a national championship, that ship has sailed.
Yeah, I think we're beyond that.
We're beyond that. But I still think they will be a very good team next year. I think they've hit a terribly rough patch. And 4 of those losses are against Pepperdine and UC Irvine, which are very good teams. The Stanford loss is a little hard to stomach, but...
Well, and 4 of them are also on the road.
Yes, yes. Is that different if those Stanford matches are in Provo? Likely, but then, of course, UC Irvine did a number in Provo this last weekend, which was not fun.
Yeah, but even if you look at the Pepperdine matches, I think you might split those in Provo.
Sure. That's fair.
But,
that is absolutely fair.
But definitely, March was not kind to the Cougars.
No, March was a month they would like to forget, as they say. So, Matt, and other Cougars in the news, the Pope leaves BYU.
I see what you did.
So, for now, the second time in the last, well, I don't know how many years now, one of the assistants at BYU leaves for a head coaching gig. This time, Mark Pope leaves to coach UVU. What's your takeaway from this? And are you worried? Some people are like, man, Rose has got to hit the ball out of the park with this hire.
I think Rose has always done a really good job of putting together a staff.
Yes.
And, you know, this is not our first rodeo of a coach taking an assistant that everybody loves, it's good for recruiting and all these things, taking a head coaching job. And I think there's 2 things I would say to that. One, I think it speaks to the quality of assistant coaches that Rose gets on his staff. 2, we've recovered from this before. It's going to be fine.
Yes, I agree with both of those things. It will be absolutely fine.
But, you know, great for him to have an opportunity to be a head coach.
Yeah, awesome.
And it sounds like, you know, this is the right time for it for him. You know, and this gives him an opportunity to do that. So, you know, I think that's great. It's a business, right? And that's where these guys are all trying to get.
Yeah, that's their, most of these guys, their career aspirations. Speaking of former BYU coaching staff members, Roger Reed was admitted to the Utah Sports Hall of Fame, which is kind of a nice side note. I know fans with a long enough memory to remember Roger Reed, he did not end his BYU time very well, but he was a pretty good coach, and until Dave Rose came along, had the highest winning percentage of any modern BYU basketball coach.
A little bit of a rough patch.
A little rough patch at the end. Yeah, it was a little rough at the end. Jordan Leslie,
some feathers.
Yeah, Jordan Leslie at his pro day ran a 4.36 40. You surprised?
Nope.
Do you think he will be playing on Sundays?
I think he's going to get a chance with somebody to play. I don't know that he'll crack a roster for opening day, but you know, because I think I'm just being a little bit more hesitant because I was so high on Cody Hoffman.
Yeah, but Cody Hoffman did not. Hoffman did not have the speed. And though Hoffman was a good blocker, you know, I think Leslie could end up on a roster for special teams.
Yeah, I'd give you that.
Because I think he could play on a punt or a kickoff team and make a difference. So I agree with you. I think he'll get a chance. I think I give him a better than 50-50 shot of making a roster because of his ability to play on special teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he is maybe the fiercest wide receiver blocker I can remember at BYU. And it's probably not true. There's probably people I'm forgetting. But, man, some of those blocks he laid out, including a couple of holds he got that were absolutely not holes. Holds. He just destroyed the guy so bad, I think the ref just assumed it had to be a hold. But it wasn't. He just destroyed him. Matt, I've seen some talk on Twitter, so this is a Cougars in the news, kind of. Tonight, he actually won, Kyle Collinsworth won Comeback Player of the Year for the BYU Sports Awards. No big surprise, right? Mm-hmm. There. Kyle Collinsworth turning pro, Matt. Over, under 10% chance he goes pro.
It's under. That's, yeah.
Why are people talking about this?
Because there are there's an irrational number of players that aren't prepared for the NBA that are declaring.
Right.
And so that's why this is a conversation. You'd hope that Kyle Collinsworth and the people around him are smarter than that, and he's not going to make that type of a decision.
We talked about this before. Both of us, you're two people now, apparently. Both of us believe he can play in the NBA, but both of us believe he's got to develop a mid-range game at least on his jump shot. I think ideally he needs to be able to shoot 30%+ from the three-point line.
Yeah, it's not time.
It's not time. And I say that obviously a little bit selfishly because I want him to stay with this group of young people we have coming in, but I also think it's not time for him. Matt, in other news, Bronco Mendenhall was ranked by CBS Sports as the 28th best college football coach, I think right behind Kevin Sumlin of Texas A&M, and two spots ahead of a certain Kyle Whittingham, who coaches at a university that I actually hadn't heard of. I don't know where it was. So, Matt, do you think they've got that right? Does that feel right to you that Bronco is a top 30 coach?
I don't know if my opinion is as important as Brady Papinga's.
Well, what does Brady Papinga say?
That Bronco Mendenhall is the greatest football coach of all time.
You know, but, I started looking at the list. I don't know if he's not top 25. I actually
but
think 28
is pretty
long.
Close to 25. I mean, you know what I mean? It's
no,
in
it's
that range.
Way off. It's not.
And
way
this
off.
Is all. This is all really subjective.
Oh
right?
Yeah, their little write-ups on CBS Sports are just like, I don't know what their methodology really was, but the write-ups show very little thought around them. You know, I shouldn't say very little thought. There's just not a lot of depth. How about that's a better way to put it? I'm not trying to disparage their.
You don't
rankings.
Think they use some type of advanced statistics to?
I do not
this.
Believe that advanced statistics were employed, but the advanced stats guys love Bronco Mendenhall.
Yeah, I feel like it's probably in the right spot. If you look at, you know, percentage of games won, I think that's probably a good place. That's a decent barometer right there, right?
Yes.
Now, obviously, the comeback to that I think detractors or just even some fans would say is, yeah, but if you break that down into games that BYU should have won versus games that they shouldn't have won and how many of the big games do you win and rivalry games and break it down those types of ways, maybe things get different. But I doubt that a piece like that went into that level of detail. And I'm not even sure that Maybe it doesn't need to, but I feel like this is all just active coaches, right? Active NCAA
right.
Division I coaches or F, whatever, Division I coaches. And I think that's probably about the right spot when you think about where the teams have been ranked and those types of things.
We've talked about that before. I think the loses and wins the games that he should or shouldn't have. I think he's got two really bad losses on his resume the last couple of years, and it's honestly, the Nevada loss was pretty bad this past year. That was a bad one. But we've talked about this on the podcast. He wins the games he's supposed to. I mean, that's just the fact. I mean, his record against teams that are below 80th ranking is like 40-2. Okay, so he's right. Got a couple of losses against teams that are terrible. But I mean, his problem is actually beating teams that are better than him, which is most coaches' problem, right? If you look at his winning percentage against people rated in the top 40, it's 11-22. So I think it's the opposite than what a lot of people think. But anyway, spring football, Matt. That brings us to spring football. So I have got a tweet here, Matt, that I want to read to you. That's from Lauren Francombe. That's at Lauren Francombe on Twitter. She's a BYU TV sideline reporter. Mm-hmm. And this is what she tweeted 2 days ago, okay? And it caught my eye. BYU defensive back Chris Badger, this is quoting him, "Last year's secondary didn't buy into system and gave whole unit a bad rep. Seems like guys are buying in this year." So my ears perked up, or my Twitter ears, and I said to her, "So he's calling out last year's secondary? Am I reading that correctly?" Then a couple guys chimed in and said, "No, he's calling out Nick Howell." And then this is what she said. "He actually spoke very highly of Nick Howell, more calling out players than coaches." So, Matt, last year we talked about this a lot, about guys being out of position, both in the defensive backfield. But he said, gave the whole unit a bad rap because a couple guys didn't buy in. How do you take that comment?
Well, I think it's interesting for a couple reasons, right? So, if you go in, there's a Deseret News article by Jeff Call where he's got a long quote by Badger at the end of the article that appeared last Saturday, where Badger has some similar things to say about how this crew, he doesn't get into anything about the past, but this crew knows the culture that Bronco wants to implement. We know what needs to be done. We know that if we buy into this culture, we'll be successful. When one guy goes down, the next guy steps up. And he's right there and he's developed and everybody's bought in. And I think that space right there is kind of where we have a blend between these comments and the comments that she's referencing, right?
Yes.
Wasn't that the question last year?
Well,
about somebody stepping up and knowing their assignments and executing. Isn't this really similar to the diplomatic way that Mendenhall was probably expressing this same thing last year?
So here's my thought. I agree with you. My thought is, we just had Brandon Gurney. You haven't heard this interview, but the listeners just did. The culture last year, there wasn't the same kind of culture. This is Brandon Gurney speaking. On the defensive unit, as there had been in years past, there wasn't that vocal leadership. There wasn't that go and get it. And, Dallin Leavitt, love him or dislike him, I thought he made a lot of dumb plays, both personal fouls as well as I think he was out of position a lot. It's hard to tell sometimes with the defensive backfield because you don't see him lined up on TV necessarily, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there were some guys out there that were thinking more about themselves than the team, and I think it showed in the performance of the defense. And I think it, to Badger's point, it made the whole unit look bad when one of your defensive backs is way out of position. And I think that happened. I mean, not just defensive backs, there were linebackers in that. And, every indication is that has flipped this year. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to be a great defense, but it does mean that I think people will be in position this year, which, again, doesn't guarantee greatness, but it, I think, guarantees you're not going to make a lot of the same mistakes that BYU made last year.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
So I looked it up, Matt. Broncos, two losses to terrible teams. 2010 against Utah State.
Mm.
And 2013 opening up against Virginia.
Oh.
Those are the only two games he's lost where the team was ranked worse than 80th in FBS. Now people say, well, that's kind of a low bar. That'd be true. And then 2014, of course, he lost to three teams ranked between 41 and 80 in kind of a weird year last year. So anyway, let's jump on to some over-unders, Matt. You want to play a little over-under?
Let's do a little over-under.
So I'm on Cougar Stats, looking at last year's stats. I'm going to do a little over-under on, we're not going to do Taysom Hill because we've talked about him and we'll talk about him more. Over-under, Matt, we're going to talk about Mitch Matthews. Last year he had 73 catches, 922 yards, looking great in spring ball. Everyone's very, very high on him, very, very excited. I'm going to set the over-under at 85 catches. Are you taking the over or the under?
I'm taking the under.
I'm taking the over.
Well, of course you are.
Just because you took the under. So why are you taking the under, Matt? Depth at wide receiver or injury concerns? What's got you hesitating?
I see a depth at wide receiver. I also think that defenses are going to be paying a lot more attention to him for a larger portion of the season.
Yes. Yes, I think both of those things are probably true. I think the depth, if he doesn't get 85, I think it's because it gets spread around a lot more. Mm-hmm. Last year, Mitch Matthews has 73 catches. Jordan Leslie had 55. And then it drops down to Mitch Juergens at 28 catches. So, I mean, that's a massive drop-off. Massive drop-off. So, Matt, next one. Last year, Devin Mahina had 20 catches, okay, as the mm-hmm. tight end on the list. Over under any tight end, not all of them together, but any tight end individually at 17.5 receptions.
How many did Mahina have again?
20.
Under?
I'm taking the way under.
Yeah.
I'm taking the way under. All this smoke about how, you know, he's going to use that. Anai's going to use tight ends. Don't buy into it. Don't buy into it. So Matt, let's look at. Let's see. What was the other one I wanted to do? So Devon Blackman last year, Matt, had 10 catches for 130 yards. Supposedly he looks great in camp. He's got the system. Last year he was confused, etc. Sometimes, and so he didn't see a lot of playing time. So Matt, over under 30 catches for Devon Blackman.
I'm taking the over, baby.
So am I. He's got some speed. Even with some of these other wide receivers, I think he'll be an important part of the offense.
And I think the ball, as you talked about a minute ago, the ball's going to get spread around a little bit more than it was last year.
Yes.
And so I think you're going to see some decent production out of Matthews, Kurtz, Blackman. You'll get some Juergens mixed in there. It's going to be fun to watch, I think.
Yes. Yes. I totally agree. I think, that wide receiver core is going to be awesome. So one last one, Matt, last year, Jamal Williams led, the Cougars with 109 rushing attempts. Then it was Taysom Hill. Then it was actually Christian Stewart with 82. Then Lasique 79, Algie Brown with 68. And then he had Nate Carter with 46. He led the team with a 6.3 yards per carry, which of course a much limited sample size compared to some of the others, Matt. Everyone seems to be talking about, you know, Brown and Hine, and of course we need Jamal back. Over under Nate Carter 60 carries next season.
I'm taking the over.
I'm taking the under. For whatever reason, I just don't think even at the end of the year, it's kind of like, I don't know if the staff really believes in him, you know? But I wouldn't mind seeing, I tweeted this out, I think I'd like to see him returning some kicks. I think he's got, he's got good straight line speed. I wouldn't mind seeing him give a shot at that.
I'll tell you, he did score a touchdown Friday Night Lights, Nate Carter.
Oh, boy. That's
the spring scrimmage, baby.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't care about that too much. But yeah, yes.
A 42-yard run. Come on now.
I understand, but don't get too excited about spring ball stats. I don't think Christian Stewart's going to be lighting it up in the fall.
What is that all about? But before we get into the Christian Stewart conversation, I think a lot of the number of Nate Carter carries is going to be a direct result of Jamal Williams' health.
I totally disagree.
If Jamal's ready to go and can play a full season, Carter's not going to see
nearly as much. Carter played last year not because Williams was hurt. He played because Hine was hurt. I think Carter plays if Brown or Hine are hurt. Jamal Williams could get 60 carries and Jamal Williams could play the entire season.
I don't buy that.
Somebody else has to get that many carries. Like Lasique had 79 and Brown had 68 last year. Somebody has to get those carries. Jamal's not going to get all of them, even if he stays healthy the whole year. So
okay, all right, maybe.
And I don't think Taysom will run as often as he has. They will not call.
I absolutely agree with that.
I believe they will not call as many designed runs, though I still believe both of his injuries were complete freak things.
Yeah. That could happen to anybody.
I when people say running quarterbacks get hurt more, really? Show me the data that shows you that running quarterbacks get hurt more. And don't tell me Michael Vick in the NFL. It's not applicable. Michael Vick was not injury prone in college. You know what is applicable? You know when you can really get hurt? Standing in the pocket and taking a blindside hit. You know,
Joe Theismann.
Ty Detmer against Texas A&M. I mean, you can, or Jim McMahon in the pros, granted that was a late hit, but it was still on a passing play. You know, you can get a massive injury standing in the pocket just as well as you can run it. I mean, over the course of the year, I mean, I worry about Taysom Hill just from an effectiveness standpoint, as many hits as he take, not necessarily an injury standpoint. You know, I just want him at the end of the year. Of course, this year we need him to be good for the first 4 or 5 games. At the end of the year, he can maybe be a little less of himself.
But we still need him in the game because apparently there is no one else.
What are you talking about? There will be. They're just one of them's on a mission and the other one's a senior in high school. That's the problem. And McCoy
Hill's
hurt.
We've got a guy who's gonna be an accountant in 4 months, running the offense in spring ball.
Yes,
like that's just crazy.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane that there isn't somebody
else. I don't think he's accounting. I think he's finance. But whatever.
They all use supply chain guys. You think it's all the same besides what you do?
You just count beans.
That's right. Well, I don't count beans. I'm a marketer. I just make crap up. And sit in meetings and talk importantly and then have people nod and then we move on.
Yes. Yes. That's good. I like that.
All right, Matt. So next week we will have our spring football wrap-up show, whatever that means, which means we'll probably have a guest to talk about spring football. And then we will talk about spring football.
Yes.
Other than that, we'll be back next week. You got anything else before we sign off?
No, I don't. That's all I got.
Well,
by the time we do our next podcast, baseball will be started, and I am looking forward to that.
Oh, next week is also our baseball preview podcast. I can't believe we didn't do it this week. That is a party foul by this host right here, because I put together the agenda today, and that was a mistake. It will be rectified next week, listeners. It'll be rectified next week. All right, Matt. Well, thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. Check us out, of course, on iTunes. Leave a review if you are so kind to say how awesome we are. If you don't think we're awesome, well, you're probably still not listening and therefore would not leave a review. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!
Thank you.